Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mundus.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Well, big Monday.
Have no place to go, darling.
6:13. Hi, goodbye, Steve Cochran. Yes, Andrea Darlis, Dave Emmett, Mary Vandeveld, Steve Grzanich, Jacobson, Mary, Sandberg, Boyle, Comcast, NBC, Chicago. Got everybody?
You did get everybody.
Yeah, I think pretty much.
All right, I'm out. Thanks.
All right, leave me.
I watched, I've seen a lot of World Series games. I'm old. I watched what I would consider to be the most entertaining, not the best baseball, but the most entertaining World Series game I believe I've ever seen. 5.5 hours after it began.
Yeah, 125 innings.
The Houston Astros are up 3-2 in the World Series. And the Dodgers now have to go back to L.A. and win two. The game saw, Dave, the numbers are fuzzy, you know, when you sleep for a couple hours. I believe the game saw 47 home runs.
Not quite that many. There were seven home runs.
Five by the Astros. 56 lead changes.
Not quite, but there were a number of lead changes and big deficits wiped out.
And the Astros had a 3-run lead in the top of the ninth. You knew it wasn't going to hold, and it didn't. Dodgers, of course, tied it at 12 in the 16-inch softball game that you were watching with me. And then the Astros won it in the 10th. Yeah. When they tied it after 9, I just giggled. I mean, first off, I shouldn't have been up at that hour anyway. And I just started giggling. This is ridiculous.
And that was like 11. That was about 11:20, I think.
Yeah, almost 11:30. Right? Yeah.
That's why you were giggling.
Yeah.
Because it's 11:20.
Well, what am I doing?
Right. So why are you so into the series?
I'm not. If you had told me last summer that, Steve, you're going to stay up till midnight, 12:15, 12:30 to watch the Astros-Dodgers series, I would have said you're nuts. But it was that great a game.
Wow. Better than Game 7 last year?
What was Game 7 last year?
That's a separate category. Different, yeah.
Yeah, it's a separate category.
Different deal.
This is one of the more entertaining baseball games I've ever seen. Last year, the seventh game, you cried, you rocked back and forth on the floor, you prayed.
Cursed.
There were no prayers last night. I was giggling like a mental patient watching a 20 in the evening.
I think the consensus is that the reaction to this game was, can't believe I just saw this happen, it's going to go down as one of the best. Ever.
Holy S-word.
Yeah.
That was a lot of that was going on.
Right?
Yeah.
And you know they're going to go to 7 games.
I don't know.
Oh, Verlander's pitching tomorrow night.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
So the Astros have won every game he started. They're 10-0 when he pitches.
Yeah. It's the power of Kate Upton.
Or every game in which he's pitched.
Yeah, the power of Kate Upton.
Yeah, that's right.
That's it.
It's all her.
It's 6:16. We got to do the top six at six here, and then we'll talk about the big criminal news of the day. And great weekend at Zanies. Great shows there. Thanks for coming out. It's Halloween. I am dressed like leaves in the fall. I have an orange hat, a green T-shirt, and a gray pullover.
Boy, that's a stretch.
Yeah, but
no, gray. That's the color of fall.
Yeah,
but green. You're leaves.
I'm a leaf.
Okay.
I'm a leaf.
So what are you going to wear tomorrow when it's actually Halloween?
Well, isn't tomorrow the uniform day?
Oh,
isn't tomorrow costume day?
Yeah, don't say.
Just watch out for rakes today.
I think someone might rake me. I'll break the tooth right off that bad boy. All right, at 6:17, the top six at six.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
With the top six at six, sponsored by American Weathermakers, the home of the 60-Minute Man.
The secret word is indictment, I-N-D-I-C-T-M-E-N-T, indictment. Bob Mueller's probe into the Trump campaign broke wide open on Friday night, late Friday night, when news broke on CNN. that the first charges had been filed. They were sealed. We'll explain what all that means with Pat Brady. Will we make Pat Brady be the prosecutor he used to be? And talk about what a grand jury does, why they do it, how they do it, and what this could mean. A sealed indictment that could be opened and charges could be brought forth against one of those in the Trump circle as soon as this morning.
Who do you think, if you had
it's
to say...
Manafort.
You think it is Manafort?
Yeah,
I was going to say the biggest name on that list that we will...
Well, Kushner.
Will be.
Kushner would be the one that would rock the situation, right?
That's what I thought, too.
Kushner, because he's family. Next! And Pat Brady will be on just a second with it. Governor of Puerto Rico has moved to... How about this story? Has moved to cancel a $300 million contract to restore power to Puerto Rico, where only 29% of the island has power, over a month after Hurricane Maria hit.
A no-bid contract. The company has 3 full-time employees.
Three. And Ryan Zinke, in charge of the department that would award said contract, happens to have a place in the hometown, the same town of this this Whitefish Power Company. The deal had prompted incredible criticism from Congress and FEMA as well. FEMA on the ground there said, we didn't have anything to do with this.
Right.
One of the interesting parts of the contract, it was a no-audit contract.
Yeah, that's a great point. There's a clause in the contract that said, nobody can question this.
Nope.
They literally wrote it into the contract, said, no, we wouldn't.
This is literally what the Better Business Bureau tells us to do every week, not to do every week.
Yeah, absolutely. They basically answered the door, and somebody said, we'll put the power back on all over Puerto Rico. Next. President Trump favors aggressive financial deregulation, but the main candidates to lead the Fed don't appear to share that goal. The president expected to announce a nominee this week, the Fed chair nominee. The funniest tweet I've seen in a long time was, I think it was Friday when Trump said, everybody is excited about my announcement about the new Fed chair. Let me just clear that up. No one is excited about your new announcement of the Fed chair. Most people don't know what the Fed is.
Do you know how he does the weekly radio address on Saturday? Very
does he
early
still?
Saturday morning? Yes.
I don't even know if he's still there.
Now, here's the thing. The weekly radio address is always 5 to 10, sometimes 15 minutes, depending on what the events of the previous week have been. How long do you think Donald Trump's speech was on Saturday?
His weekly radio address?
His weekly radio address. I would bet I was listening to it. It was less than 30 seconds.
Why even turn on the mic?
And he said, we're going to announce a new Fed chair. Everyone's going to love who this person is. Go have fun.
Wow. He phoned it in.
Probably 20 seconds of that, yeah. It was the strangest thing I'd ever heard.
See if we can find the sound of that. We could actually play the entire address over and over again. President Trump's approval ratings have hit a new all-time low at 38%, though his handling of economy now has dropped down to 42%. Maybe the most important statistic is that non-college educated whites, this is the voting bloc that put him in office, non-college educated whites now are at 51%. Mm-hmm. This is a number that was in the 70s. 51% approving of the job he's doing. Not approving of him, not approving of his triple over comb over haircut, none of that. It's not the personal thing. This is how's he doing in the job. Mm-hmm. 51%, falling like a stone. Next! Sexual harassment claims continue from the past, from the present. Kevin Spacey now apologizing after actor Anthony Rapp accused him of sexual advances when Rapp was a teenager. In a statement, Spacey said, he doesn't remember the encounter, but says if it went is described, it was deeply inappropriate, drunken behavior. And I'm sorry. Spacey also took the opportunity to announce that he has had relationships with men and women, and he chooses to live as a gay man. I would salute him on that because you know how to be comfortable in your life, whatever your life is. But a 14-year-old, that's criminal.
Yeah.
You know, so he's very lucky that Rapp and Rapp's parents or folks around Rapp didn't want to press charges. And then... The Chicago Bears lose to the Saints yesterday. More on this later with Hamp and Coach Ditka and Dave. But the biggest blow yesterday was the fact that Zach Miller not only may be done for the year, he's got a career problem here with his knee being blown off, essentially. And just a ridiculous call on an overturned touchdown.
Yeah.
But as Hamp will discuss, you can't be in a position to lose the game that way anyway. It shouldn't come down to one play, but when you're as thin as the Bears are, you can't have that go against you. Pat Brady's with us. Before Pat was a political genius and one of the proud proprietors of the Lincoln Forum, lincolnforum.org. He also was a prosecutor serving in the offices that would take down the bad guys and deal with the white-collar crime. and knows a little bit about this that we don't know. So good morning to you.
Morning.
So a seal indictment means what?
Grand jury on Friday, the grand jury that sits in D.C., the investigative body for the prosecutor returned a true bill of indictment against somebody, and they put it under seal, meaning that no one's supposed to know who got indicted or what's in it. They go before a judge, and the judge seals it, and they're going to unseal it today, supposedly, sometime this morning, and then probably a couple or somebody's going to be arrested and arraigned and processed, and then we'll know who's been indicted, and hopefully, depending on how detailed the indictment is, we'll know which way the special counsel investigation is going.
Why is an indictment sealed? What's the decision-making process there?
There are a lot of reasons to do it. I think in this case, and in white-collar cases or public corruption cases, oftentimes the prosecutors are working closely with defense counsel, and they give them an opportunity to surrender. They don't go bust their door down and arrest them. They say, okay, we're going to indict you on Friday. You're going to keep it under seal or keep it private until you get a chance to get your affairs in order. We'll meet at the courthouse at 9 o'clock. And the first thing they'll do is they'll take them in, they'll process them, they'll print them, they'll take a picture of them. Then they'll appear before the judge for arraignment, and then they'll have a bond hearing.
Pat, if it's leaked, does that change or lessen the charges?
No. And the leak talk over the weekend that some on the other side are trying to blame on Mueller, when you actually return that true bill, the mechanics of it is you have to take it from the grand jury and take it over and docket it with the clerk. So there's probably 30 people, including the people walking down the hall, that might have had a chance to see it or know what's in it. So it doesn't, the charges are what they are. The leaking's just, the prosecutors can't do that. They're ethically bound not to leak that information.
The grand jury process that's been going on, coincidental timing in the fact that it came out Friday, a day or two after Trump said, and well, actually Friday itself, Trump said, yeah, well, this whole Russia thing's over. That didn't speed it up?
I don't think it sped it up. I think that Trump's, the president's it was probably more reactive to what somebody, maybe even the defense attorneys who know what's going on, might have tipped the White House off. And so the last week, they went on this messaging campaign of saying that this is going to be the end of it and Mueller should recuse himself and all the things that we saw last week. To me, politically, it was kind of a overreaction by Trump. If you remember what Clinton did when he was under all these investigations, he just said, I got to focus on being president.
Yep.
And I put the other things in the box. But Trump does just the opposite. And I think it actually legally could hurt him down the road, but they've chosen to go that route.
Yeah, his attorney, the oddly named Ty Cobb, actually tweeted out that nothing the president tweeted yesterday morning has anything to do with the investigation, by the way. Really? Oh, really? It doesn't? Well, what does it have to do with Ty? In the meantime, let's shift to the politics part of this, because prosecutors don't speculate, but politicians and people who talk about it do. The logical conclusion seems to be that this has to be Paul Manafort, based on the fact the FBI did a no-knock raid in his house and supposedly told Manafort, we're going to indict you.
Yeah, and exactly. But here's the long and short of it. The Russians tried to interfere with our election. What this is all about and this investigation is all about is, did some people in the Trump campaign help them along? And then the next question will be, depending on what these indictments are today, did Trump, the president of the United States, work with his people to help the Russians? And that's the big question. We're a long way from that, but we're going to know a lot more today about where this investigation is going. This could be a very low-level, kind of insignificant indictment, or it could be someone as significant as his former campaign chairman Manafort, Carter Page, the energy consultant, even as far as maybe Jared Kushner because of that meeting they had in Trump Tower, Michael Flynn. We won't know until we actually read the indictment.
Pat, could whoever is indicted ask for and receive immunity?
You can ask for it, but at this point, if you've already been indicted, those conversations about immunity are typically before you've been indicted. It's not like these people are on opposite sides of the world. They never talk to any of the defense counsel, the prosecutor. They talk all the time. And you would come in on a day, and they call it clean for a day, and say, here's what my guy would say. Would you immunize him? And apparently, in this case, if you're going to be indicted, you've probably already had that immunity discussion. You might change your mind, but usually that issue's over by the time the indictments are issued.
So the potential defendant and his attorney at some point have to decide whether they're going to call the bluff of the prosecutor about whether or not they're going to be charged, right? So in other words, you come to me and you say, listen, this is not going well for you, and this is the path it's headed down. And then my attorney says, well, what if we do this? Can we get immunity? You say, we're not at that point yet. And then I walk out without doing anything that you want me to do, because there is that TV cop show version of this that we all want to jump to, which is somebody is going to get used to get to the higher ups. But in the real world, doesn't it work that way?
It does. And there's a couple theories. Sometimes you indict low and go up the ladder, indict a lower level person. And this prosecutor, from what I read, and I don't know him personally, but he did the Enron case, and he would actually indict family members that were in the circle of legal exposure and flip them. That could happen here if they indict Jared Kushner or somebody else in Trump world. And you can still get immunity post-indictment, but typically the discussions are before indictment. And that's what we're going to learn today. And there's another thing, Steve. It's not just call the bluff. Sometimes you just go, I didn't do anything, and we've got a pretty strong legal case here, so we're going to fight it. Now, that's expensive, and that's a risk, because federal prosecutors have about a 95% conviction rate, or 95% successful. But again, there's a lot of speculation right now. We'll know today whenever they release this thing.
If it isn't released today, what does that say? If it isn't open today.
That everybody speculated all weekend over nothing.
But from a legal standpoint, if it doesn't get open today, is there any legal reason it wouldn't?
There's a lot of reasons that it wouldn't. There are probably more procedural reasons than legal reasons, but it really, the under seal part is, you can indict people under seal all the time. There's a million different reasons to do it. But the one thing that I think on this investigation that I think would stop a lot of the people that don't like it is if at some point, maybe today, that Mueller indicts a Russian corporation or some Russian to actually show that there was some kind of Russian collusion. Oh. It kind of takes it out of the political.
Oh, that's interesting.
Spirit. Let's see. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but that's one of the things I'm thinking of. If I were sitting there, I'm like, you know, I'm going to indict a Russian corporation if the facts justify it, just to kind of put this all to bed that this is some kind of political witch hunt.
All right, depending on how it goes, we may double back with you. I know you've got a life and an actual job and a company to run, but that's not our problem. That's your problem. So we may dial you back.
Things. This will be interesting. This will be interesting to read.
Thanks for the education.
All right, see you guys.
See ya. That's Pat Brady, and he's a great, great resource and asset for us. He's a big asset for us, I'll tell you that right now.
I have edema on my thigh, pink stuff in my eye, and I need you now. I've got a stomach pain that's low, fungus on my toe, and I need you now.
You don't want that toe fungus.
He's from Central DuPage Hospital.
And Northwestern Medicine.
Call Dr. Moose right now.
Sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, making people better by making medicine better. And that really is the topic as Doc joins us. Good morning, Doc.
Good morning, Steve. How are you doing?
Doing all right. You know, this opioid, and I hope you are as well, the opioid story is unbelievably depressing. It's depressing to watch. It's depressing to hear about. And yet, as depressing as it is, the one thing you don't want to do is run from it. And I tell you, I'm a little optimistic this morning, not about politicians doing the right thing, but about the fact that this thing is being covered at a level it hasn't been covered at ever. And awareness is good. This is what we need, more awareness, more on the problem. Now, you've been talking about this forever, so let's do a little history here. Because I know you've been talking about what doctors do, how you treat people that come in, what you need to do to do all that. But one thing we've really found out is opioids don't care, right? They don't care if you're rich or poor. They don't care where you live.
And that's probably one of the big awareness points that you're talking about, too, is, you know, people think they're listening. They're like, oh, yeah, that's an inner city problem. And we really have to realize that it is not. This is impacting kids in our high school. This is impacting just successful business people. This is impacting lots. And I'll tell you, one of the most saddest one is probably how it's affecting newborns. You know, we have newborns in the NICU, NICUs, which is a neonatal intensive care unit, across this country that are being treated for withdrawal, that are being treated for addiction because their parents are addicted or their mother was addicted. So you can imagine a two-day-old, and we're giving them morphine because they're addicted to opioids.
And the story this weekend about an 18-year-old and a 19-year-old grew up together, same neighborhood, nice cul-de-sac, nice homes, nice families. One's 18. I think one was 19. They died within 2 hours of each other, both of overdoses. It's just, it's outrageous. So how did we get here?
Yeah, you know, Steve, it's kind of interesting. When you look at the whole story of how we got here, it's something, you know, numerous books have been written about it. But, you know, in the early 2000s, late 1999, 2000, we said, and I'm not sure even who we was, is we're doing a terrible job of taking care of people in pain, and we need to make sure that we keep people pain-free. So we want pain to be what we call the fifth vital sign, your blood pressure, your pulse, your temperature, but also we want to make sure that these people are pain-free. So Big Pharma comes up and says, you know what, all right, this is perfect for us. We're going to get a drug that's going to make people pain-free, and we're going to tell them that it's not addicting. So all these people who have pain, and now you have this drug that's a morphine-based drug that's non-addicting, and the doctors say, well, this is easy. Anybody can do this. We give them this non-addicting drug. Their pain goes away. Everyone's happy.
But was it non-addicting?
That's the problem. Not only was it not non-addicting, it's highly addicting. You know, it only takes a dose or two of these medications sometimes to get people on that addiction pattern. And unfortunately, we've continued to use these medications because pharma has not come out with other medications that are more appropriate. You know, you have somebody who had surgery and we're giving them Norco or OxyContin or Tylenol with codeine, something even as simple as that, for their pain. And then we say, oh, by the way, you know what? We're going to take these away and we want you to take some Advil.
That was my question to you, Doc. I've known two people in the past year who have had minor surgery. Everything's okay. But there's this fear now. Neither wanted. They were prescribed Norco. One was prescribed Norco, the other codeine. They didn't. Both didn't want to take them because they said, well, I don't want to get addicted. And I was saying, take the Norco, you know, just for a couple of days, you know, to ease the pain. So do you see people are kind of trying to suffer through pain rather than take a low-dose prescription of a Norco or a codeine for a short period of time?
Absolutely, Andre. I think that's exactly what's happening now, especially with this awareness issue. The more people are aware of it now, they're afraid of it. Now, believe me, there are patients that need pain medication. I am not saying stop all pain medication. We have patients with cancer that absolutely positively need it. We have patients who have surgery that if they don't take it, they're not going to get up and they're not going to move around and we're going to have more problems. So using it appropriately is one thing, but using it inappropriately and at large volumes for long periods of time is the patients that we're concerned about.
There is a preponderance of this in smaller, hardworking, blue-collar towns that seem to be, so many of them seem to be in Ohio and West Virginia. But don't think you're out of the woods here in Illinois and beyond, because the legal prescriptions have turned to the scourge of heroin and fentanyl. How did we get from this to that? What is fentanyl? And is that the greatest danger of anything we have in this country right now? Doc will tackle all that when we come back. Stand by. Dr. Kevin Moe, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, making people better by making medicine better. We're talking about the opioid crisis and the huge news that it appropriately is. But you talked about the, what'd you call it, Doc, the fifth level, the fifth?
Fifth vital sign.
The fifth vital sign.
Yep.
So we knew that prescriptions were up. We knew that overdoses were up. How did that get missed? And did we get to the next level? Well, now we're, you know, it's the gateway to heroin and fentanyl.
Yeah. It's not that it was missed. I mean, we know it. If you look at how many of these drugs were being manufactured and prescribed, and so we knew more people were getting addicted to it. It's how do you stop that tide now, and how do you get that back? And like you said, you know, now we're starting to see things on the street, because all you need is a few people addicted, and all of a sudden addiction spreads and spreads and spreads. And I'm not saying that physicians don't have a part in it. We have a large part in it. But unfortunately, what we're seeing on the street is even worse. You know, you get someone hooked on a Norco because they had surgery, and all of a sudden the surgeon says, well, no, you don't need any more Norco. Your surgery is completely healed. You don't need any more. And that person's still addicted. They're going to the street now, and that's where they're getting, like you were saying just earlier, that's where they're getting these pills that are Norco with fentanyl in them. And that's the scary part.
It's funny because the same people that are in this desperate situation who would be very careful about what they eat and wouldn't take candy from a stranger on Halloween are going out and buying unregulated drugs, and they don't know what the composition of the drug is because they're that desperate and they could die, and many of them do. So explain to people what fentanyl is and why it's so bad.
Yeah. Well, fentanyl, and you guys may remember, we talked about fentanyl when Prince died, because Prince died of an overdose of fentanyl. And fentanyl is an opioid. And let's put this in perspective. We all think heroin is terrible, right? And it's very dangerous. Fentanyl is 50 times stronger than heroin. The thing about fentanyl, we use it for surgeries all the time here, because from the IV use, it has a very rapid onset. So you take fentanyl, within 5 minutes, you have that high. The nice thing about it from a hospital point of view and a medical point of view, it has a short duration. So it has a 30 to 40 minute duration, and then it's gone. But for the abuser on the street and the guys that are selling it, they're selling it saying, hey, you're going to get the high quicker. So we're going to give you this fentanyl with this Norco. We're going to lace them together. You're going to get this high. And then by the time the Norco kicks in, you're going to even have a better high. So it's very, very difficult. And these are the ones where it's that strong and you don't know what it is and you're buying it on the street. You're overdosing very easily.
Here's the multimillion dollar question, though, Doc. How is it getting from the hospital where it's being used properly onto the streets where it's almost, I don't want to say readily available, but it's out there?
Absolutely. And it's not coming from the hospitals. Some of it's not even coming from drug manufacturers. This is being illicitly made. And unfortunately, if you listen to Trump, they feel that the vast majority of this is coming in from China. So it's a distribution process of drug dealers and drug sellers that are getting this out there and then repositioning it in the communities. So it's not like it's being stolen from the hospitals. I'll tell you, hospitals and pain clinics have extremely tight diversion monitoring. I mean, we want to know where every single vial of every single drug went. And if you don't have an answer for it, we sit down and we go through the case. We go through it with the doctor. We go through it with the nurse. So it's very tight in the hospitals.
Yeah, there's tremendous health concerns. There's also tremendous liability for the hospitals. They know where every pill is. Now you got people who are getting prescriptions who are selling them and turn on the street for how much?
Oh, big money. You know, there's parts of the country where, you know, these pills are going for 20, 15, 20, 25 bucks. So you think about that. The person, and the 60 Minutes was a great example of it. Here they had this town, this county in West Virginia that was getting 11 million opioid prescriptions, 11 million opioid pills, right? And if you did the math, they had 25,000 people living in the county. That was enough for every single person in the county to get 36 pills every month.
It's unbelievable.
Unbelievable. Those are the pills that are hitting the streets.
The DEA, speaking of 60 Minutes, the DEA was featured with having their resources taken away by a bill in Congress related to drug distribution restrictions so that these pharmacies who are getting these huge amounts of pills could still get these huge amounts of pills. This is a congressional problem again, like everything else.
It absolutely is. You know, the DEA, don't tie their hands. The DEA essentially could have gone to this county in West Virginia and said, hold on, we're holding your prescription. We're holding this order because this does not make sense. So we are not going to put those drugs out on the street. There is no way every single person in your county needs this. The senators, unfortunately, said, oh, well, hold on a second. There are people who have legitimate pain. And therefore, you cannot stop that. You must go ahead and deliver those drugs, and you have to figure out a different way to slow this down and to change it. So the DEA gets their hands tied and saying, wait a second, we're taking areas of the country with high overdoses, areas of the country with these unusually high prescriptions, and we want to get to the brunt of it to stop it from getting to the patient in the first place. And they said, no, I'm sorry, we have patients with pain that we need to make sure that they are covered, which there are legitimate patients with pain. But I can tell you, in that county of 25,000, they did not need 11 million opioid pills.
Parents are listening, grandparents are listening, they got kids they're concerned about that are headed down this kind of path. What do they do?
Yeah, you know, there's obviously treatment options, but unfortunately there aren't enough treatment options. And I can tell you, especially for the parent that knows their child has a problem, get at least some Narcan in your home. That's the drug that can prevent overdoses. That's the drug that can be given quickly and keep a child and keep an individual alive. And in Illinois, you can buy Narcan without a prescription. Those are for the patients where I know my son has a problem. I know my daughter has a problem. I know my wife or spouse has a problem, but I can't get them into treatment yet. They're not at that point. At least have something to protect them. And those that don't.
And you can buy it at Walgreens now, right?
Correct. Yep. But the biggest thing is we need more treatment centers. And unfortunately, the funding is not there behind it. And it's difficult. You know, the treatment centers now are filled with patients that have insurance. So when you have patients that don't have insurance, I'm sorry, we don't have a spot for you because we have patients with insurance. That's the difficulty. That's the problem that we have.
20,000 lives a year taken. Doc made a point when I talked to him about this. Said, look, if we had an infectious disease problem in this country and 20,000 people dropped dead, you wouldn't leave your house. So the attention that's on this is appropriate. Great information, Doc, as always. Thank you for it. Sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, making people better by making medicine better.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Start winning some games. Let the words be Super Bowl that comes out of your mouth. That's what it's about. You know who's a genius on this team, coaching staff, and in the front office? Nobody. Nobody.
You know, every time they show Fox, he's over there fooling around with his headset switch. You know, how would you like to be at home with him with the remote trying to watch TV?
Well, I don't think whatever would be on, that's all it would be because he wouldn't know how to change it. That channel would be, it could be a, and it would still be there.
The only bowl game that we got to look forward to is the Toilet Bowl in Flushing, New York. That's if we qualify, and I think we got a shot at it.
Oh, the boys were cranked up yesterday. I think it one point. I heard OB say ding dang diddly. I don't even know what it was about. I just remember giggling in the car. Dan Hampton joins us now. And what happened to you, Hamp? Because were you locked out of the building or something? I didn't know what that story was about.
Well, you know, OB likes to play the elder statesman, if you will, you know, the stately elder statesman. But I texted him at 10:30 after Fox, you know, my responsibilities were done. So I'm sitting in the 33-degree, parking lot in my truck waiting for him to come. And I said, when you come, let me know, because about 3 weeks ago, my car was broken into and all my credit cards and my ID.
Oh, wow.
To get in the building was taken. So I need someone to get me in the building with their pass. And, of course, I'm under the impression that, the jolly OB is going to comply. Well, now it's 5 minutes till 12, and I text, where are you? And he goes, I'm up in the conference room eating. So I'm sitting in the parking lot for an hour and 20 minutes waiting for him to come and let me in the building, and he makes it into the building, and I'm sitting there watching. I don't know how he gets in. He's like a cat burglar. So anyway, the whole day got off on the wrong foot.
Yeah, I'm guessing so. And by the way, somewhere in Chicago, I assume it happened in Chicago, is the person that broke into Hamp's car who just found out they need to go into the witness protection program, because if Hamp finds you, you're in trouble.
Well, they've been sentenced today. They got caught.
Yeah. By the way, in the continuation of the breaking news, Paul Manafort, and apparently his attorney, have just walked into the FBI offices in Washington. We'll continue to watch that story as well. All right, at 7:16.
Hey, did OB help get them in with his pass?
Yeah, he was standing at the door. He said this way.
Okay.
It wasn't sandwich related at this hour. All right, so here's the deal. The Bears lose a very winnable game. A terrible clock management, bad coaching decisions here and there, bad ending at the end. But let's start with the most glaring play. You don't want to do the fan thing and go, well, if the refs didn't blow the call. But you lose your tight end with a blown knee, which could be a career ender, and a reversed call. Is the NFL even commented on this? Because it was a terrible call.
I agree. Let me just say this. After the second time through, I could not watch it anymore.
Of course not.
Obviously, no, I know. It was gruesome. But Kozlowski and OB both maintained that operating with this ridiculous, process of the catch nonsense, another reason Roger Goodell should be fired, is he's got a bunch of goons in there making up rules. Now, think about this. A running back only has to put the ball across the plane of the end zone for a nanosecond.
Right.
But a receiver's got to count to 10 and juggle it and not juggle the ball for, you know, at no point. Otherwise, it won't be called. So I think that whole nonsense is ridiculous. I personally, yes, I thought it was a touchdown catch. And, you know, Zach Miller, he'll be missed. And, you know, it was a gruesome play. But, again, you know, these are the type of, you know, bad breaks that badly prepared and badly coached teams almost, you know, allow to happen on a weekly basis. Now, you saw Connor Barth miss another makeable field goal.
Yep.
I mean, how much longer are we going to have to watch that? The other part is their guy doinks one through. That's a 6-point swing, a 4-point swing on, you know, getting the touchdown reversed, and then we have to then kick a field goal. So, boom, there's your 10 points that would have won the game, as it were. But, as it you know, again, everything doesn't work out the way that, you know, you wanted to, so you got to find a way to make plays. And we did not do that. And, you know, at some point, you've got to say, was Trubisky a better player yesterday than he was when he first started 4 weeks ago? And it looks to me like I don't think so. And, you know, what's really, you know, when you contrast it to the performance and the actual weeks of performance that Deshaun Watson is putting up, you know, for the Houston Texans, everyone's starting to shake their head and say, hey, something's really, you know, off the tracks here. But at the end of the day, you got to start saying, hey, Dow Loggins, what are you doing? There's no rhyme or rhythm to this offense. And at the end of the day, that 3rd-and-1, 4th-and-1 botch where he, you know, you've got to get the first down. You got to get a new set of downs. And yet they're still, you know, calling a 5-step drop pass play on 3rd-and-1 and 4th-and-1. So, again, you know, one of the things I talked about was keeping your composure on the road. Tough place to play against a good team, yada, yada. Well, we didn't, you know, the whole fourth quarter, we just basically, you know, started running around like, you know, bulls with a chick, you know, chickens with their head cut off. And Fox after the game, you know, wanted to say, hey, we tried hard. Like, you know, that's going to be any solace. It's not. We had a chance at a winnable game. Our defense played their butts off. And he'll Drew. That's a clunker. Drew Brees knows that they're lucky.
Very lucky.
That game with the win. But as we move forward, you know, we got a week off. What are we going to do to improve this team's chances of winning by being better and smarter with our plays, our coaches, our game plans, all these things? Because guess what? We just don't have enough talent to beat people, you know, on sheer athletic ability.
Right.
All right. Not to belabor this, but, Steve, you asked what the NFL is. Well, the referee meets with a pool reporter after the game.
What did he say?
And his explanation was, I love his first statement. Obviously, we are all familiar with the process of a catch at this point.
Yeah, actually,
nobody's familiar with it. That's the problem.
We don't want to be, we don't want to be familiar with it. It's an idiotic, stupid rule guys like Dean Blandino and the rest of these losers come up with. Why? Because they're trying to, you know, refine the process and make it even more cerebral. No, either it's a catch or it's not. We all know what a catch looks like. That was a catch.
He goes to the ground. He has to survive the ground. He went to the ground. He temporarily lost control of the ball. The ball hit the ground. Therefore, it's incomplete.
But again, Hap made a great point there. Why
the ground can't cause a fumble?
Well, the ground can't cause a fumble. But also, the other point you just made was a running back. You know, one nub of the leather in the football can cross the plane, and a running back can fumble, and it's still a touchdown.
Yep.
Why is that allowed? And the other, it's a ridiculous discussion. Yeah. All right, so okay. Hamp, as you go forward into this week off, let me answer the question you asked from a fan's perspective. You're either going to turn Trubisky loose and let him see what he's got and make the mistakes a kid's going to make, or you're going to continue to stunt his growth. Am I crazy when I say that?
No, you're getting real close. But more importantly, hey, somehow, some way, you know, and maybe we'll see Dontrell in the nut. He's the guy we traded for. You would think he got there on Wednesday. Couldn't we have seen him run a fly pattern or two? But
he's got a
hamstring. So, but what? Maybe we'll get this kid up to speed. But yesterday, Fox basically kind of let the cat out of the bag when it showed on the 22. You know, when they showed the 22, nobody could get open.
Right.
But that's not once a game. That's every play. Every play. Guys like Trey McBride, they can't get open. Tanner Gentry, they can't get open. So at some point, you know, either devise better plays or we got to get a lot better players.
We will talk to you later in the week. What was that noise you made with the cat getting out of the bag again?
Well, it's out now.
Not going to get him to do that again.
That was very impressive. Hey, listen, if you stole Hemp stuff, just put it back. It'll be fine. And it's not like he's going to pound you into submission. Unbelievable.
Well, I've got to find a way to get the pass because I can't count it on the cat burglar. I watched the door for an hour and 12 minutes, and I never saw him go in, but he was upstairs.
He's sleuth.
I think we can get him another pass.
He is sleuth. Like, yeah, we know people. We'll make it.
Yeah, we know some people.
All right, buddy, thank you. That's the Hall of Famer, Dan Hampton, brought to you by ChevyDriveChicago.com.
The Steve Cochran Show.
And obviously there's been this discussion of Paul Manafort, who played a very limited role for a very limited amount of time. But beyond... Hey, Jonathan, hold on. Can you stop interrupting other people's questions? Hey, Jonathan, somebody's asking a question. It's not your press briefing.
I know Mr. Manafort. I haven't spoken to him in a long time, but I know him. He was with the campaign, as you know, for a very short period of time, relatively short period of time, but I've always known him to be a good man.
Let me follow up on that question from Bill Kristol, who, of course, is not part of the Clinton campaign. Are there any ties between Mr. Trump, you or your campaign, and Putin and his regime?
No, there are not. It's absurd, and, you know, there's no basis to it.
Well, it appears we found something. Ryan Nobles joins us from CNN. You know, Ryan, I hope you had a good weekend, first and foremost.
Yeah, very good weekend. Thank you.
And this breaking news, I really appreciate you being on because you're in the middle of it in Washington. I assume the entire town was abuzz with it all weekend?
Yeah, so we first broke this story Friday night that there were charges that were had been filed and were set to be unsealed this morning. And I was actually at the Bureau. I had to run over to the White House late Friday night. And I basically spent a good part of the weekend attempting to get some sort of comment from the White House on this. And they basically have nothing to say. And that's not just, you know, White House officials, the attorneys representing the president, but also the president himself. You know, he's tweeted a lot over the past 48 hours. He's talked about Democrats. He's talked about Fusion GPS. He's talked about the country's gross domestic product. But he has not at all talked about Paul Manafort, the special counsel, or the fact that these charges have been filed. And it's very difficult to get the president not to weigh in on something. So it seems as though his lawyers have made it pretty clear to him that he wants to stay as far away from this as possible because there's obvious connections here. And he's been spending a lot of time calling this special counsel investigation a witch hunt. And this morning, Robert Mueller has essentially delivered his first piece of substantive progress as Paul Manafort walked into the FBI field office in Washington, D.C. this morning, basically the first major arrest as a result of this investigation.
There are discussions that, and unconfirmed unless you have more on this, that this first charge would be related to tax evasion. For folks who know Manafort's name and know him more as an Elvis impersonator, Manafort was the campaign chair, not for a limited period of time, because the campaigns run a period of time that is limited in and of themselves. But he was the boss of the campaign at the very important time of the convention and even determined the platform would go easy on the whole Ukraine-Russia mess. He has very distinct ties and very shady history in regards to how he comported himself, and was an odd choice to get into the Trump business to begin with, but then maybe not so odd because of his ties to Russia. So my point for all of that, Nobles, being from your friend Cochran here, even though this could be about taxes, this does tie into the whole Russian piece of this story.
I mean, The idea that we would describe Paul Manafort as a limited player in the Trump campaign is laughable on its face. There were only three different people that were completely in charge of the Trump campaign. You had Corey Lewandowski, who was the person who was in charge from the primaries through right before the convention. Then it was Paul Manafort. He was the campaign chairman. He was the number one person in the campaign from about the end of the primary process through the convention and a little bit after. And then the third head would be a multiple head of Steve Bannon and Kellyanne Conway. So you can't deny the fact that he was tied into this. And yes, there was a key piece of this component that under Paul Manafort's leadership, the Republican Party messed with their platform to loosen these connections between Ukraine and Russia and to take a different stance on that in terms of American policy. So that's just, brushing the surface. That's just stuff that's widely available in the public. So the idea, and then there was already a Republican congressman on this morning, Sean Duffy from Wisconsin, who was on CNN this morning, who's trying to say, well, this doesn't at all reflect badly on the president. We haven't seen the indictment yet. This could be from Paul Manafort way before he knew Donald Trump. Well,
yeah.
The idea that you could make that argument is just laughable on its face, because even though Paul Manafort was only his campaign chairman for, as you point out, it was a short period of time, in the lifetime of a 100-year-old man, but a significant amount of time in the course of a presidential campaign. Donald Trump and Paul Manafort have known each other for a long time. Yep. If you've seen that documentary about Roger Stone, Paul Manafort's all over it, and yep. He talks about how long he's known Donald Trump. So, if this is somebody, this would be like my uncle being arrested and someone telling me that I'm not connected to it in any way, shape, or form. This has got to make the White House nervous this morning. The idea that they can just ignore it and slough it off as being not important at all is laughable. I know I've used that word a lot this morning. But the other thing I want to make clear, Steve, is that now a lot of this falls back in the laps of Republicans in Congress, because the one chip the president can play here to throw a wrench into this investigation is to instruct Rod Rosenstein, the deputy attorney general, to fire Robert Mueller. And if he does that, the only way that Robert Mueller can stay in his position, if Republicans in Congress have the fortitude to pass some sort of law that puts the special counsel's office in indefinitely without interruption from the White House. So far, already this morning, Duffy being one of them, Republicans are not ready to take that step. So that is an important thing to keep an eye on.
And by the way, they could do that today.
Yeah,
they could draft that and vote on it and do it today.
Basically, give Mueller immunity or some sort of protection.
Yeah, that is
put
right.
Him in some
yeah,
sort
yeah,
of a bubble, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Ryan, let's talk about Rick Gates, too. He seems a very minor player up until, maybe a half an hour ago. We're saying, who's Rick Gates, former deputy campaign manager? I know it's very early. This is day one. But minor player, I think I was expecting to hear more either of a Jared Kushner or a bigger name in this first indictment.
Yeah. Well, the idea that Gates isn't a big name is something we need to take that out of our minds right now, because Gates, in a lot of ways, is Robin to Paul Manafort's Batman. This has been his sidekick for a really long time.
That's a great analogy.
And the other thing, too, about Gates that's interesting is Gates came with Manafort into the campaign, but Gates stayed on after Manafort left. So if your argument is that something happened with Manafort before or after the campaign, well, Gates has been around it just as long as Manafort and then some time. And then there are some thoughts that Gates has actually been to the White House and has actually kept in regular contact with the president and his team, perhaps more than Manafort, because, those sound bites that you guys played coming in, which were apt, the president's tried to, ward off Paul Manafort like he's a plague, acting like he doesn't know who he's been as soon as he left the campaign. Well, Gates was still around. Gates was someone directly tied to Paul Manafort that still played an important role in the president in the early days of his administration. So, yeah, Gates is an important player. And, the question I think a lot of us have this morning is, Steve, you alluded to what could possibly be in this indictment. That's the one thing we don't know. We know the types of lawyers that Paul Manafort's hired. We know that they raided, or I'm not sorry, Paul Manafort, that Bob Mueller's hired. We know that they raided Paul Manafort's home in Northern Virginia at a pre-dawn raid. It was a no-knock warrant. But we don't know what that indictment might say. And then the question begins, is this an effort to get Paul Manafort to cut a deal that would then go for a bigger fish? We don't know that yet. And I think that's where you have to start to ask these questions about what's Paul Manafort's motivation. There's a lot of symbolism that happened this morning. He didn't come in a FBI SUV into a parking garage out of the sight of cameras. He walked right in front of the cameras with a big smile on his face. Manafort's been around for a long time. He knows how this game is played. And so I think, we're going to learn a lot more when this indictment is unsealed. But, the idea that there's no blowback on the White House is something that is just just cannot be true at this
point. It's absolutely not. The question is, for those who are the most diehard Trump believers, will you believe and accept Mueller's findings as this goes on, or will you only believe what you agree with? It's the core problem in this country right now, because I'm here to tell you, there's no secret how I feel about Trump and the Trump White House. But if Mueller comes back and says, we got nothing on Trump, I agree with Mueller's findings because he was hired to do the job. I wasn't in the room. I didn't look at the evidence. So for those of you who are going, this is nonsense, everybody's picking on Trump again, ask yourself, if Bob Mueller, with his impeccable record of chasing bad guys, both Democrat, Republican, and otherwise, will you accept the findings? More with Ryan Nobles from CNN. The big news of the morning is Paul Manafort and his, such a great analogy, his Robin to Batman. And somebody just texted Ryan, holy collusion. But this guy, Rick, is it Rick? What's his last name?
Rick Gates
stayed on after Manafort left the campaign, stayed on and may have been the connective tissue between Manafort and Trump as well. How much of that gets played out, we'll know eventually. When will we know the contents of the indictment? Will that be this morning?
It's possible. We're still a little bit unclear this morning as to whether or not this is just going to be an initial hearing or if it's actually going to be a full arraignment. And the difference would be just the appearance would be to him to acknowledge that the indictment's been handed down and for them to set a date for the arraignment. If it's a full blown arraignment where he actually has to plead to the charges, then the indictment would be unsealed. So that might be part of what he's been negotiating with his attorneys in the FBI as to how that all plays out. My guess is Manafort would probably like to rip the Band-Aid off as quickly as possible and get this process moving. But that's not something we're probably going to know until a little bit later this morning.
By the way, this does not mean that this is some sort of floodgate situation where, you know, three times this week you're going to get more indictments. It could be a long time before we hear anything more about this. This could be the sum total of it, or there could be many more. But we have this is not indicative of any timing, right?
No, not at all. And I think there are a lot of people surprised that there's been a charge handed down this quickly. This is usually not Mueller's style. He waits until he's got all of his investigation complete and then hands out the indictments all in one big lump sum. So this is why some people are speculating this morning that maybe this is an attempt to leverage Manafort to draw someone else in or to learn a bit more. All those scenarios that you just laid out could mean, you know, maybe Manafort's the only fish that he ends up catching. And so I think that the idea that this is the end, I think is 100% true. This may be the beginning of the end, but I think we still have a long way to go. And I think there's a good chance that even this time next year, Steve, you and I are still talking about Mueller and his investigation.
Well, then you can talk to me from the institution I'll be hospitalized at.
Well, you know, that's a great question, though, Steve, or a great point I should make out. And it leads back to the point we talked about before about how Republicans in Congress want to react to this, right? If there's still a special counsel investigation happening on Halloween of 2018 and you're a Republican in an at-risk district, are you going to want any part of that? We are just really getting into how the politics plays into this because, you know, there's going to be a race in Virginia a week from Tuesday that I'm covering where Trump's fingerprints are all over it. You know, now you're going to be talking about every single congressional district across the country, a big handful of Republicans that are up for reelection in the Senate. The special counsel could be the most dominating issue. And if it's still going on, if more indictments are handed down, it's going to be very difficult to be a Republican and run along with the president.
And I continue to point out as well that the Democrats are being cowards while the Republicans are being ridiculous, those that are speaking out and saying Mueller should go. The cowardice being you have to step up and speak as an American about this, not as a partisan lefty or a righty, because it's not a Democrat or Republican issue. It's an issue of the trouble that's in the White House. So where are the Democrats?
You know, I mean, it seems as though, for the most part, Democrats have just been using this as a political opportunity, right? This is a way for them to not necessarily concern themselves specifically with the investigation itself, but to use it to blow up the pieces of legislation that Trump wants to get pushed through. And I, you know, you raise a good point there. You know, should the Democrats be focusing more on the role that the president played with Russia specifically, as opposed to just using this as an opportunity to say, well, we don't like your health care plan. So in Russia, 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 let's blow the whole thing up. You know, both sides are trying to take advantage of this as best they possibly can. And you know, and I think this may be part of why Mueller decided he needed to start handing down some charges, because so much of this has been left to speculation and what if and what could be. You know, today we're finally going to get some idea as to the direction he is heading. And maybe then that's when you start to see Democrats change their tune about this. You know, there have been a few people talking about impeachment, but, you know, they're backbenchers for the most part. You know, party leadership doesn't really want any part of it because there's really not that far they can go with it. You know, at this point, it's been just a political conversation by Democrats.
And we get numb to all of this on some level, but you got to remember that all of this is of Trump's making, in that if he doesn't fire Comey, Mueller's not part of his world. If Mueller doesn't do the investigation, Manafort doesn't have to do a perp walk today. This all starts with Trump and his lack of impulse control and whatever criminal activity he may or may not have been involved with. But he is, one of his favorite words, a disaster. And the bad day that he's having is a day made by him.
I'll let you say that, Steve.
Oh, I wasn't trying to drag you in, believe me.
No, but I think your point is right. You know, the president can't ignore this anymore, right? He can't just assume that this is a witch hunt. And then the other thing we haven't even talked about this morning is about how he and his associates have been clearly planning this diversion and attempt to undermine Mueller's investigation, suggesting he's spending too much money when we haven't even seen his budget yet, suggesting that he's not focusing enough on Hillary Clinton. I don't know if you saw the other day on Fox, Corey Lewandowski suggested that this investigation should be into the Clinton administration. Someone apparently didn't inform him that Clinton didn't win the election. You know, that is all
exactly
a calculated effort to make it seem as though Bob Mueller isn't credible. I don't think it flies with most people who know him, and it just gets into the way of him attempting to do the work that he needs to do to get to the bottom of this investigation.
Everybody's got to ask themselves, what's best for this country? The far right and the far left are the problem, not the solution. So let's meet in the middle and fix it while there's still time. Ryan Nobles, you got plenty of work to do. I'll let you go. Thanks as always.
Thanks, guys. Have a great week.
That's Ryan Nobles from CNN. Imagine his day, right?
Happy Monday.
At Ryan Nobles all over social media. Dean joins us after the news, which is next on 720 WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should.
Good morning, Dean. How are you?
Busy news morning today.
Oh, lots going on. In case you missed it, the development from last hour, Dean Richards and Wizzo the Clown were both indicted after Paul Manafort's investigation took a surprising turn.
Turns out the Stone of Arabia should not be used in a public place.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I hope you've learned something from this.
That doing is not a good thing to do.
How great would that be if you had to read that in court? In the case of the doing. All right, we have a major show business story. As you know, Dean, sports is entertainment as well. Yep. You'd agree with that, wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah. I heard you talking about the game last night. I fell asleep, but...
Well, that's not the only game this
unbelievable
weekend.
Unbelievable last night.
How about Saturday? How about Northwestern? The Northwestern Wildcats against the Michigan State Cheaters.
Spartans.
They should have been able to beat that Northwestern team and spank him a good one.
I don't think so.
I'll roll with this narrative
okay
for a minute.
Okay.
Which led to an incredible Northwestern run and yet another overtime victory. Jake, you have the sound on this? Go ahead, roll it.
Second and 10, Michigan State here in overtime number 3. Lewerke looking, pocket collapsing, stripped of the ball. It's loose. Now Lewerke picks it back up, rolls left. Now he heaves it downfield. It's going to be jump ball at the goal line. Intercepted! Intercepted by the Wildcats. Intercepted by Nate Hall. The Wildcats win. The Wildcats win. Unbelievable. The Cardiac Cats in triple overtime have knocked off the 16th ranked Spartans, and this ball game is over.
And so is my voice.
I just wish that I could get Dave to do every comment he makes on this show in that same sort of excitement.
It's my favorite thing.
It's like I go, Dave, how was your weekend? It was fantastic.
It was unbelievable.
It was a great call. Thanks. I salute you. It was a great call.
Hey, it was a great game. Great win. It was a great game.
Yeah.
I mean, see, can't get entertainment like that anyway, except maybe game five of the World Series.
Yeah, exactly. So. Dean, how was your weekend?
My weekend was delightful.
A little more energy?
What's that?
A little more energy, please. How was your weekend?
Oh, Steve, it was great.
He could do the game with me next week.
Oh, Steve, it was great.
Now we're getting somewhere.
Sorry.
It's over.
Here's the list. Kevin Spacey's in the news. Oh, Rose McGowan's in the news.
Oh, boy.
Bieber's in the news. Selena Gomez is in the news. This Is Us is in the news. Janet Jackson was back in town. Dean's got an event tonight that I think is pretty cool that you ought to know about. We'll get to all of that after traffic and then more Dean live from Channel 9. First, what do you have, Mer?
And traffic sponsored by ADT on the Edens 28 Cough outbound, inbound 20. Are you okay?
Excuse me.
Oh, is that on? Sorry. Yeah. Go ahead, Mer.
You'll be calling his name. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor.
Dean, tomorrow on the show, we're going to be doing the annual trick-or-treating by phone. I don't know if you remember, but people call in, they say trick-or-treat, I ask them what they're wearing, and then we send them something from the prize list.
Oh, you ask what they're wearing?
Yeah, yeah. So let's pretend you're a listener. Let me go to the phone. Hello?
Hello, Steve?
Yeah, what is your name?
Dean.
Dean?
I just want to say I enjoy the show.
Are you a first-time caller, long-time listener?
No.
Oh. All right, so you're calling to trick-or-treat by phone. What are you wearing?
I'm a cowboy.
On a steel horse you ride?
No, it just got weird, though.
Oh, yeah, because it was perfectly normal when you said, what are you wearing?
Well, how else am I going to do trick-or-treating by
phone? What's your costume? Not what are you wearing?
What are you wearing is funnier. All right, so this Bieber-Selena Gomez story, she and Bieber dated when they were like nine, right?
They were dated on and off for a long time, and then it seemed like the whole thing was over. He moved on to various different actresses. And
tattoos.
She moved on. Oh, he's fully tattooed now. Yeah. Good luck trying to find space for a new one. She moved on most recently, dating the performer named The Weeknd.
Mm-hmm. Spelled incorrectly, by the way.
Spelled incorrectly, mm-hmm. That's correct. Mm-hmm. But hey, that's his name. Mm-hmm. What's he wearing? The So over the weekend, they were spotted several times together, canoodling.
The Biebs and Selena?
Selena and the Biebs.
Does Sneed know about this?
We don't know if they're back together again. But they were having breakfast. They were seen together quite a bit. And we don't know how The Weeknd, spelled incorrectly, is reacting to all this.
Spelled incorrectly, open for The Weeknd. Well, good luck to both of them. You know, I pull for the kids. Who got married from This Is Us in real life?
This is the actor named Justin Hartley.
Oh, that's the hunky dude.
The hunky dude.
Yeah.
Married Chrishell Stouse over the weekend. She is a soap opera actress with All My Children and Days of Our Lives.
What's her name?
Chrishell.
Chrishell.
Chrishell Stouse.
I've never heard that name, have you? I mean, not Stouse. Stouse is her last name. I've never heard the name Chrishell.
Chrishell. No, it's the first time I've heard it. Huh. I thought it was a cracker, honestly. I thought it was the name of a cracker.
Oh, these Chrishells are tasty.
These
can
are
I have more?
I love dunking my Chrishells in the coffee.
Well, good for him. I hope they're very happy.
Yeah, wait, married who? Kevin?
Yes.
The one who plays Kevin? Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Got married, engaged last summer, and they got married this past week.
He's having an opioid problem on the show.
They are a very handsome couple together.
Is he a method actor? Is he actually on opioids?
I don't think he is, no.
Okay. Janet Jackson was in town?
She was in town doing a show, but she and her brother, Randy, mm-hmm. You remember them because you were, for a couple of years, were part of the Jackson
family. I was. I was Steve, the other Jackson.
They drove down to Gary, Indiana, 2300 Jackson Street, and they went and took a look at their two-bedroom childhood home. It's a tiny little house that's been restored, and I think it's designated a historic place in Gary. But
it should be.
They Janet teared up. Looking at the childhood home.
She remembered Joe was her father.
She brought back some memories that apparently she'd rather not remember. They also went to speak to students at Roosevelt High School there.
This sexual harassment and sexual conduct story continues to be huge news, and that's a good thing.
Yeah.
What's the Kevin Spacey piece?
This actually broke overnight, in which Anthony Rapp, he's mostly a Broadway star, but he's in the new version of Star Trek, which is out. He's involved in lots of projects. By the way, also from Joliet, Illinois, Anthony Rapp.
Okay.
Came out overnight and is accusing Kevin Spacey of making a sexual advance to him when he was 14 years old. They were both working on Broadway at the time, and they were at a party at Kevin Spacey's apartment. It was mostly adults. He was the only kid there. So
he was like 14 at the time.
He was 14. He goes into the bedroom to watch TV because he was bored with all the adults. And then the party just sort of broke up. According to his allegations, Kevin Spacey made an advance toward him. Kevin Spacey issues a statement overnight saying that he does not remember the incident, but said that if it did happen, he's horrified by it, and said that he apologizes profusely for the whole thing. He apologizes for if it's true, he keeps saying if it's true, the feelings that Anthony Rapp must have been carrying with him these all these years. And then at the end of this apology, which I find interesting and really, he also said he doesn't remember it, but if it happened, it must have been in some, you know, a drunken period. So, you know, essentially saying he was drunk and that's why he doesn't remember, that's why he did it. But he does imply that he was drunk when that happened. And then, at the end of the tweet, says that he now chooses to live his life as a gay man. This is the first time that Kevin Spacey has publicly admitted to being gay.
Yeah, it's been known in Hollywood forever.
Forever. For 25 years, this is something that's been well known. But a lot of people are reacting very poorly to a couple of things that, in a way, he's trying to justify the accusation of touching a minor because he was drunk. And I agree with that there's no amount of drunk that justifies forcing yourself on anyone, much less a minor. And that he's trying to soften this somehow by saying that he chooses to now come out to be gay, to live his life as a gay man.
It's the weirdest thing. How does being gay and coming out now make this story any better for him?
It doesn't make any sense. Not to mention, I mean, a lot of groups are saying that one doesn't choose to be gay.
Yep.
That it's not something you go, oh, it's Wednesday, I think I'll be gay. that's not the way a lot of people and experts believe about this. So Kevin Spacey thinking that he's defused all this stuff maybe has made it worse in a variety of ways.
Yeah, he's entitled to live his life, and it's good that he's being more public about it, I think. Having said that, he couldn't have botched this more.
Right.
And this could still be criminal if the young man decides to make it criminal, because he was 14 at the time.
Right. It was 32 years ago, but
I don't know what the statute of limitations is. I don't know what the story
is. But still, it's, you know,
it's an awful story.
There is nothing that incenses me more than anyone who touches a minor.
Right.
All the stories, even with adults, anyone who forces themselves on somebody else, it's disgusting. Anyone who touches a minor, I have zero sympathy for that.
My brother and I, my special needs brother, my brother and I were both involved in a situation where an old guy tried that, and he tried it on my brother, and I had a bad feeling that my brother was in trouble in some way, and I walked in on this guy trying to touch my brother. Everybody's fully clothed. I don't want to paint this in the wrong way here. But it was clear what was going on, even to me at the age of 7 or 8 years old. And I pushed him, and my brother and I got out. But those type of situations go on every day.
Horrible.
And when you're a kid, you don't see them coming because you're a kid.
Right.
So this 14-year-old, the trauma that he carried. I don't even know why it came out now, but it's good that it came out now. But Spacey's got more explaining to do.
Yeah,
I guess that's the end.
Anthony Rapp had a very long statement and a very detailed description of what happened. But he said he felt emboldened by all of the people who are coming forward now and saying "Me too." That accusations that came out against Harvey Weinstein, and another shoe dropped with that over the weekend as well. Rose McGowan is one of the ones that first started all these publicly coming out and talking about these accusations over the weekend. Said that she is alleging that Weinstein tried to buy her silence the day before the allegations came out, offering her $1 million to sign a non-disclosure agreement that would have prevented her from speaking out. She said that she actually had to think about it. It's $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately said the money would have made her feel disgusting. Weinstein continues to deny all the allegations, saying that anything sexual that happened was consensual.
And Bill O'Reilly continues to say that the $32 million settlement he paid in one case was to protect his family. Wow. Really? $32 million.
Bill Maher on his show on Friday night said, how bad was it? Was it that whatever you did cost $32 million to keep it quiet?
It's the absolute question. Yeah. All right. Thanks, man.
All right. See you.
Talk to you later. That is Dean Richards, but you knew that. You've met him.
We'll come
back to the big story in a second, and Mike Ditka coming up as well on your Bears. Do you think you owe more for your home than it's worth? Amy Kett of Keller Williams Realty Infinity says you set a price and deadline, and if your home isn't sold, Amy can buy it. Or she has a management company that can help you rent your home. And working with Amy doesn't obligate you to anything. If she's not doing the job you hope would work out, well, then she'll let you out of the deal. Bill had a stroke, lost his job, wasn't able to make his mortgage payments. The house was underwater, so he called Amy, who helped them through the short sale process, sold their home in 4 months, and she helped them find a new place. That's the full service agency piece of this, because it's not just about the transaction and the deal. It's about your life. The only agent I'm recommending is Amy Kite. Amy Kite works 8 counties around Chicago. Call 847-877-9881, 847-877-9881, or online at amywillsellyourhome.com.
Ditka.
Well, it's coming right now, right for us at 22,000 miles an hour.
Ditka.
Not a soul on earth can hide from
it. The Steve Cochran Show now welcomes Mike Ditka.
I'm happy for Steve, and I told him I'm proud of him. I tell you what.
The best Bears conversation is right now on 720 WGN.
The coach, Mike Ditka. We're thinking about Zach Miller, coach. It seems like such a freak accident the way he landed, because it wasn't a contact hit, was it?
Well, no, I don't get contacted very much anymore. If somebody wants to contact me, they have to hit me in my head. I sleep a lot.
So, we all should sleep more. But when Zach Miller landed on that leg and that knee popped, I don't know that I've seen anything like that without a collision.
I knew it right away. I knew he either hyperextended the knee or he really tore the ligaments on the inside. It looked like that's what happened. It's a crazy injury. He's one heck of a football player. You hate to see that, but you know, I can't say it any other way. But football is it's dangerous. People are bigger, faster, stronger. They hit harder. Much harder. The speed of the game is much greater than it was when I played the game. That's all I can tell you. And that's due to the athleticism of the athletes. But the body, how strong can you make your body? You can only make it so strong.
Sure.
And it doesn't matter how strong you make the muscles. Those ligaments are still in, when you hit them the wrong way, they're gonna tear.
Well, we wish him nothing but the best. You know, Bears fans are frustrated because yesterday was a winnable game against a pretty good football team and didn't get it done. Any particular area that you saw which goes, well, this is what they got to work on?
I think the coaches will tell them the same thing. You got to be consistent. You got to be able. If they went up against a great quarterback and a great offense in New Orleans, New Orleans could score points. Consistency is the whole thing. You just can't win with a great defense or a great running game. You have to have the whole thing. You got to have a little bit of everything. And right now, it just seems that they're just lacking a little bit. And one of the things is being able to score points. That helps a lot. When you get ahead, make the other team come after you, it makes it a little bit easier.
Mike, when you caught a pass when you were playing in the NFL, in your Hall of Fame career, did you ever have an official say to you, well, you didn't complete the process of the catch?
I wonder what Ditka would have said to the ref.
I'm afraid that would be censored. I don't know what I know. I don't. I listen.
But it's changed, though, hasn't it? I mean, this wasn't. I remember guys caught, made acrobatic catches. You never heard, well, he didn't complete the catch.
Well, I don't want to get into the officiating. I'm too old for that. But I really don't understand some of the calls. I'm sorry. Maybe it's me, but I think there's so many cheesy calls, I guess you'd call them. I don't understand. It's football. Let him play, within reason. I mean, if it's a bad holding call or something,
sure.
Or a clip, I understand all that, yeah. But, I mean, some of this stuff gets a little silly. The guy's hand flies up off his chest. It hits the face mask. They call it a face mask penalty. That's not a face mask penalty. He didn't grab the face mask.
Right.
He bumped it. He brushed it. I don't know. I mean, I get frustrated, too. As a fan watching, because I really don't get it. I mean, I understand their job is to officiate the game fairly, honestly, and to make it fair for both teams. But sometimes some of the calls, I go, what happened?
Am I remembering this right, Dave? Wasn't it the Lions receiver that...
Yeah, at Soldier Field against the Bears.
Yeah, and the Bears ended up winning the game because it wasn't a completed football move. Calvin Johnson.
Yeah.
And ever since then, nobody knows what a catch is.
That's right. I mean... If the fans are confused, Mike, I mean, it should be something where if you see a guy make a catch and it looks like a catch.
It's a catch.
I mean, it's a catch. But
if it looks like a catch and it smells like a catch, it's probably a catch.
Hey, we got a question for you related to our mutual friend Dan Hampton. So, Coach, we have these ID cards you need to get into the building here at the Tribune Tower. So Hamp had his car broken into and somebody took all his credit cards and his ID card was taken as well. That's a bad move anyway if Hamp finds you. But secondarily, he was waiting for Ed Obradovich, your old friend and teammate, and Obi was going to let him into the building at the same time. Well, Hamp's sitting out in his car for an hour and a half. He looks up and Obi's already in the building. Was Obi sneaky like that when you played for him? Because he apparently sneaked right by Hampton, who didn't miss many guys in his day.
No, it's pretty hard to sneak by Hampton, believe me. But no, Obi wasn't. He lined up across him, the guy, and he ran over him. That's what he did most of the time.
Right. There's nothing subtle about Obi.
Well, I don't, it's crazy. I mean, I'm sure that happens, but, how do you keep the guy out? It's his show.
Well, Hamp made a good point about this incongruity with the rules thing this morning because, and Dave, you and I were talking about it. And, Coach, you've dealt with this forever. Running back goes across a fraction of the goal line. Any piece of the ball hits a fraction of the goal line, it's a touchdown. He can fumble all day from there, and yet you've got to complete a football move to make a catch. I just feel like they got to fix that, man. They got to make that more consistent.
Well, you made a great point because I saw it a couple of times yesterday, and I'll be darned if I thought it was a touchdown. But they said part of his body was past the goal line. It's a touchdown. I didn't think it was. I was watching a lot of the games. I was really watching Red Zone a lot, so I saw a lot of different games. But, officiating is not easy, but they're paid to get it right. These guys, this is their life. This is their career. This is what they do for a living. It's important. It's important to the organizations, to the fans, to everybody. So you got to try to get it right a little bit more than they're getting it right now. And I'm not criticizing anybody. I mean, it's a split-second judgment call. You make it. Sometimes it's right. Sometimes it's wrong. I really believe in instant replay. I think if you can fix a wrong, go ahead and fix it. I mean, they're wrong. Fix it. Get it right. The whole idea is to get it right. You're not going to be, officials are normal. They're human. They make mistakes. So you can't see everything. So use the instant replay a little bit more and get it right.
When you were watching Red Zone, did you get to see any of Carson Wentz and the Philadelphia Eagles? And what do you think of this kid and what he's done?
He's good. He's really good. I think the Eagles, first of all, are a very good football team. I look at what they do offensively, and they attack you. They really do. But Carson Wentz is really playing. He's playing great football. I mean, you look around the league, and you look at some of the quarterbacks, Drew Brees, or you look at the guy up in New England. There's so many good quarterbacks in the league right now. The guy up in Green Bay, he's hurt right now, but it's so fantastic. So you look around the league, and if you don't have a quarterback that can get the job done, that the troops don't rally around, you're going to have some problems. And I think the Bears have a good quarterback. I really do.
Got to let him go a little bit, don't you? Don't you got to let him throw it a little bit? And sure, he's going to make mistakes.
Well, what is your philosophy? A lot of people, I had a guy named Walter Payton. I thought it was better to hand the ball to him than throw.
Well, that made you a genius.
See, that doesn't make me a genius. but I understand where the bread is buttered. I mean, hand it to the guy and let him, him and Matt Sully would get the job done up in front. I had a good offensive line. Those are the things to me. The people, they really don't see. I mean, when you say, well, the guy scored a touchdown, but somebody had a block for him or somebody had to throw him the ball. So there's a whole lot that goes in. And when you get ultimate or the most everybody playing for the same reasons, good things happen. They really do.
Where are you playing golf again and when? Because I have a low-end temperature. If it's below 50, you really got to work hard to talk me into playing.
Well, it's a little chilly down here today, but today the course is closed, so I'm playing. I'll play tomorrow. I stink, but I play. I got nothing else to do. What am I going to do? I'm old, and I hit the ball. I was thinking the other day where I used to hit the ball off some of these holes I play now. Mm-hmm. Now I'm up on three tees instead of on the back tees, and I can't even get it 50 yards close to where I used to hit it. So. It's crazy.
It does make you crazy. I don't think you've lost that much, but it does make you crazy. Coach, good talking to you as always. Enjoy your day.
All right. God
Thanks.
Bless you guys. Take care. Okay, thanks. Bye-bye.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Now, Inside Edition with Deborah Norville.
9:13, our friend Deborah Norville from Inside Edition with a story that couldn't be more timely, but then again, that's what you guys try to do every day. Good morning to you.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
I'm all right. Nice to talk to you again.
Thank you.
The University of Tennessee trainer, who a few years ago said, listen, Peyton Manning, great quarterback, but back in the Tennessee days, he was beyond inappropriate with me. Well, now you've got all of this Me Too stuff, which is, more than appropriate to talk about. And thank goodness everybody is talking. And this story has resurfaced. What do you know?
Well, what we know is for the first time, Dr. Jamie Nawright, that trainer from UT years ago, is speaking publicly about what she says happened in the training room. Peyton Manning, you will also be hearing from for the first time. We will be airing an excerpt from his videotaped deposition in connection with the defamation case related to that incident and that woman. It does go way back. Peyton Manning, of course, a phenomenal player, just retired from an amazing career with the NFL, will be inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame coming up in December. Dr. Nawright, after this incident happened, left the University of Tennessee, had a financial settlement, and both parties signed a non-disclosure agreement, said we're not going to talk about it. But what happened a couple of years later, Peyton and Archie Manning wrote a book. And in the book, they mentioned Dr. Nawright by name and referred to her as vulgar-mouthed in describing a incident, not the one in the training room, but an incident in which Peyton said in the book that he'd been asked by her, using some foul language, to drive some younger students from point A to point B at an event they were attending at UVA. So therefore
demeaning her in the process.
Demeaning her, right. Yes. And calling her vulgar mouth. And she also says that her job, her new job, where she was a trainer, and this was a woman who worked at a pretty high level. She was the official trainer, the head trainer for the women's track and field team in Beijing. So she worked at a pretty high level in her field. And she said her job was adversely impacted. Responsibilities were taken away. She lost a directorship of a program. And after this book appeared, so she filed a defamation lawsuit. And in the course of the defamation lawsuit, Peyton was asked to testify under oath about the incident. And the incident, she says, was she was examining his foot, and he dropped his shorts, lowered his naked backside onto her face, and his genitalia fell down on her face. He says that that's not what happened, that that's a lie. He says that what he was doing was dropping his pants and mooning a fellow teammate. He says for 1.5, maybe 2 seconds, his trousers were down.
I'm not trying to be flip here at all.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You can moon somebody and not have your butt or your genitalia
touch the person
in the face mm-hmm. of right. the person who happens to be sitting there. That's a ridiculous explanation.
Yeah, well, that is his explanation. And she was so horrified by what happened, she says she left the training room and went over to a colleague's house. And under deposition, the colleague says, look, I saw her. I was with her when she found out her brother died. I was with her when she found out her father had a massive heart attack. Her reaction to this was so much more emotional and appeared that she had been traumatized. That's my word, not hers, from the deposition. But so much more extreme than I had witnessed on those two previous occasions. In fact, her boss, who admits he's the one who coined the term mooning, it wasn't Peyton's word, it was Mike Rollo. He was the head trainer, the guy that this woman worked for. He even said under oath that, well, actually, I wouldn't have expected her to get so upset over mooning. So that's all in the court record. Long story short, if it hadn't been in the book, one wonders if anyone would even know what happened.
Sure. Right.
Something did happen in the locker room. Nobody denies that. It's the what that there's a dispute about.
Deborah, we've talked before. I love your interviews. I'm glad you did this interview. Did you get the sense, you know, so many times, and especially now with Bill O'Reilly and mm-hmm. Harvey Weinstein, all these mm-hmm. allegations resurfacing and coming to the forefront and the head that they're coming to now, I'm tired of hearing, and I'm sure you are too, well, this is a publicity stunt or a fame seeker. She didn't ask for this. You know, what would she benefit by coming forward and bringing these allegations to light?
Yeah, there's no financial incentive for her whatsoever. She didn't get any money from us. This is probably going to, you know, make her phone ring and stuff. The reason she says she stepped forward is the Harvey Weinstein people. She says she's been inspired by their bravery, and she's no longer a party to a non-disclosure agreement, so legally she is free to speak about this if she wishes. And she says she feels like people need to know. And I think what we've witnessed with this whole Me Too thing, as of Friday, there were 4.5 million postings on Facebook with the hashtag Me Too. Mm-hmm. That's on Friday. I'm sure it's many more by now. I just don't know what the number is on Monday. And I think what we're witnessing is the proof that unburdening oneself of a long-held, upsetting moment in one's past, and in some of these women's cases, it's more than just one moment, is we've recognized how heavy that burden has been. And I actually sensed, you asked how was it talking to this woman, when the interview was completed, I sensed a lightness to her, not a giddiness, but as though some of that backpack of bricks she's been toting
sure,
around
therapeutic.
Were not quite as heavy as they'd been when she walked in.
And I think that's the important piece of the Me Too story, too, is the ability for these women as a group to be able to talk, to say it out loud, and to not feel like it's something
heard.
They have to care and be heard. Mm-hmm. Speaking
and
of which, Sandberg produces this show, told a very painful story about something that happened to her on this show. Mm. I know you've dealt with this, you know, at points in your career, to be sure. What do you say to young women mm-hmm. who are listening who don't know how to handle it?
Well, that's a great question, and the young women today have something that certainly I didn't have when I was coming up, and that is the sense that this is wrong. You can't do this. It's not acceptable behavior, and it is perfectly all right. In fact, you must speak up and say no. to the extent that you can document it, like that clever girl Gretchen Carlson did when Roger Ailes is putting the moves on her. And we still don't know the details because she's not at liberty to speak about it, but I imagine she must have had her phone in her pocket. And it was recording. Isn't that funny? Because when that lawsuit came out and there were statements in quotation marks, a lot of us looked in there and went, ooh, my goodness, I believe they got this man on tape.
That's a problem.
The extent, young ladies, that you can document this, go for it. Make sure you don't violate your state's laws. In some states, you're not allowed to record without the other party's permission. So know the law, but also know that the truth is your friend.
Yeah, documented in writing, too. I know you got to run. I want to mention, too, there's a coffee machine story coming up this week that might make you never drink coffee at work again as well.
Pretty much. We've just spoiled coffee break.
Oh, no.
On Inside Edition. Thank you, Deb.
See you, Deborah.
Thanks, guys.
That's Deborah Norville at Inside Edition. And let me just say what I've said before, but say this to men again, too, whether you're watching on CLTV or listening now. And I know Dave would echo this, and Mike as well. You know when you're over the line. You do. And I've reached out to some friends in the past week where I've said, look, if I've said something stupid to you in the past that made you uncomfortable, I want to apologize. But I can sit here with a clean conscience. I know you can as well, Dave and Mike.
Yes.
To say that I have never said something that was a condition of employment for somebody that worked for me or worked with me. It doesn't make stupid comments that are unwelcome okay, but you know when you're over the line. So don't walk around as a man and go, hey, I can't say anything now. You know, everything's off limits. Stop it. Stop it. Be a man. Man up. Be better. We all have to be better. This is not just on women. This is on men. We're the cause of the problem.
And I'm glad she said what she just said to four young women and all women, too. Now, you're encouraged to stop it, report it, say something. Because in the past, even so much as 10 years ago, it was always, I think, felt that don't say anything. You don't want to lose your job.
Sure.
You don't want to rock the boat. You know, now it's almost like crime. If you see something, you have to say something.
Right.
You have to do it not just for yourself, but for the millions of women who are coming after you.
Yeah. And by the way, if the job went away because you stood up, you didn't want to work there. It's 9:23. We're back with more in the 9 o'clock hour because it's 9:23. Thanks for listening wherever you are. And this is 720 WGN. Listen, Steve Grzanich is standing by in the newsroom, and there's even more breaking news on a crazy, wild, busy news day. What's up?
The special counsel's office, Sir Robert Mueller's office, has announced that a third person has been charged today. This is a Trump advisor named George Papadopoulos. He's from Chicago. He's been charged with making false statements to the FBI. No further information on this, but he is one of Donald Trump's former policy advisors during the campaign in the 2016 presidential election. No details about these charges yet, but it was just an addendum to sort of the bigger story today that's happening.
And is he a Chicago guy?
He is. Wikipedia says he is from Chicago. We're still doing a little bit of research here on him and on these charges. But we'll have the full story for you later on this morning.
It's frankly one of those names where you go, well, that's somebody I know, but George Papadopoulos, very common Greek name.
It is. I know it sounds funny, but it is a very common Greek name.
Yeah, and this was a surprise, right? Because, Steve, this morning we thought the two would be it today.
Well, and this looks like the charges against this actually all happened maybe several weeks ago. We're just now finding out about it today. So there's questions about whether or not this had anything to do with the indictments that came out today.
Got it.
Whether this man maybe turned into a cooperating witness. We don't know. We're still kind of working on that detail.
You know, the last two people to talk to Mueller were Spicy Spicerman.
That's right.
And Ryan Priebus. The two guys who were in collectively or separately every meeting. Every meeting, every flight, and now it seemed like the speed of this kicked up after that. So I'd be curious when historians and the rest of us look back at this whole ugly incident and series of incidents, if Priebus and Spicer weren't the keys to Mueller being able to kick this forward.
Absolutely. And Pat Brady told us earlier this morning, too, with regard to immunity, because I said, can Manafort or someone ask for immunity? And he said, now it's too late. That's all being discussed now. So now you have to wonder, because I agree with you, what if Spicer and Priebus perhaps are working on some sort of immunity deal at this point?
It's possible.
Because pre-indictment.
It's possible. And the other thing is that's hanging out there is this pardon question and the firing Mueller question. If Trump fires Bob Mueller, and you don't see Congress go into a complete meltdown over it to the point where impeachment proceedings start at that moment, then we have malpractice at a level that we've never seen.
Conspiracy?
And,
I mean.
And then there's the question about pardoning.
Right.
What are his pardon powers in relation to this, in relation to the timing of the indictment? Same thing. If he starts pardoning people, this is Nixon all over again. But again, Nixon, when it finally came clear that it was over, Nixon turned the tapes over because the Supreme Court, he said. I'm telling you, Richard Nixon still had respect for the country. Donald Trump stood up at the end of the election and said, if I lose, it was rigged. I'm not going to validate the election. Is Donald Trump going to stand up after all this and say it's all fake news? Mueller made it up?
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to have faith in the person doing the independent investigation, which is why I asked the question earlier this morning. Are you going to believe the findings, whatever the findings are, or are you only going to believe them if they agree with your viewpoint? It's an important question.
And now that's what Pat Brady said, too. Congress has to act now to put Mueller in some sort of a bubble so he can't get fired.
Yeah, and Congress could do that today.
Yeah.
927, news next. You'll have the big story on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
943, Halloween's tomorrow night. And one of the best moms I know, Patty Vasquez, our friend Patty, is in studio.
That was nice of you.
What are the boys going to be?
Griffin is going to be the 12th Doctor, played by Peter Capaldi. I don't know if you're familiar with the Doctor Who series.
What?
The 12th Doctor from the Doctor Who series.
Griffin is this crazy smart kid.
Yeah, right. We're going who?
Yeah.
What?
Did I tell you what I'm going as?
What are you going as?
Werewolf Blitzer.
I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about Declan?
Declan is going to be, we haven't really decided yet, because usually we do a themed family sort of, like I'll be possibly River Song, also the Doctor Who series.
You can't find more obscure characters other than the Doctor
these
Who
are
12th
not,
Doctor?
Right now, we need some texters to tell you these are not obscure
sure not.
Characters.
I'm sure they're not.
Doctor Who is like a 50-year-old
series. I know
series.
The Doctor Who
oh,
series.
Oh, this is a cool costume.
And I've never watched it.
He looks like a British lord.
Yes. It's kind of that sort of longish waistcoat.
Yeah,
but as
deals.
A mom, do you want your son looking that fly? to use a term from the 90s?
He looks so debonair. Dashing. I got that coat for him. Yes, he is very debonair looking in that. And he wore that coat for like 2 days in a row. He looks very sharp.
Yay. He's at school now, right?
He's at school now.
How are we doing on the girlfriend thing?
You know, I asked him one day, I said, do any of the girls have a crush on you? And he said, why do you assume it would only be girls?
Wow.
Yeah, that's
very, very trendy.
And when he runs for president, the world will be a better place.
And it wasn't like in a smug, like everyone should like me kind of a way.
He just didn't want you to be labely.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Isn't that weird?
And labely is a word.
It
it's
is.
It's not like
yeah.
I just made it up.
Oh, it's great.
Actually, if I use the word labely in front of Griffin, he'd go, really? Labely.
Right. It's not a word.
All right. So we were just talking to Deborah Norville a few minutes ago about this. You got anything you want to say to young women? I mean, I know you've gone through this for years.
I also want to say, you know, this, we were talking about, she was talking about Peyton Manning and the woman who was working
as
a trainer.
Yeah.
And she, how negatively this impacted her, not only emotionally, but also economically. And I think that, I hope that going forward, women feel like they can say something. And the problem is that this woman told her friend, you know, mm-hmm. who said that he'd heard her on the day her father died and when her family members had mm-hmm. traumatic health experiences, and this shook her up. You know, we throughout our careers, you know this, Andrea, we've told people what's happened, and our friends listen to us.
Sure.
And no one really knows what to do. I think that part of it is to know that your truth does matter. Mm-hmm. And it's not just sexual either, because I have worked with somebody professionally for many years, someone who I considered a friend I used to confide in. And he waited till we were alone in a green room to say, you know, I have a bone to pick with you, and launched into a rant about my career, about my personal life, and then said, you know, you make me want to punch you in the face. And since then has impacted me negatively. Economically, has been vicious in emails and notes to me, and I've kept all those because he's been needlessly mean to me in ways that aren't necessary.
There's no freelance, or there should say there's no HR in freelance.
No. And I thought about it. This was at Zany's Comedy Club, and I thought, like, with everything that's happened, do I go and talk to Bert Haas and say, hey, this is somebody who has your ear, who is very close to you, who also works with the Funny Bones and, you know, helps feed comics to that sort of, like, all these dozens of clubs. And I know that he has held me back. But there's no sort of fault. There's nothing I can do.
There
about
was never
that.
Any repercussions.
You know, correct.
Like you could, you're absolutely right. You could bring it up, you know, because I've talked to you over there. I mean, I've been friends with you, Steve, for almost 20 years. You know, we'll talk about different things.
Sure.
You'll give advice, but like we said to Deborah Norville, you never thought anything would be done about it.
No,
it would be like, well, you know, you want to keep your job.
Exactly.
You shouldn't say anything. Don't rock the boat.
Listen, I said something to Deborah Norville that, and correct me if I'm wrong here, because I truly feel this way. If you can't go to an HR department with any measure of confidence and the creep is still going to be your boss, I know it's not easy to find another job, but for your own benefit, not to let the creep get away with it, but
right.
for your own benefit, shouldn't you get out of there and if you're not going to get any help?
Right. Well, get. I mean, for comedy, I mean, like already our opportunities are limited as far as that goes. You know, I actually told the manager at Zany's that night. I was like, this is the weirdest exchange I've had with this comic.
And you got no backup?
Oh, I got no backup from any. I mean, like, what is anybody going to do? For the most part, everyone considers him to be, you know, a big, jolly guy that everybody loves.
Well, what about your situation with the guy that used to run this place?
Oh, yeah.
Who is no longer alive.
Right.
Who, what was the comment? It was something about...
me into his office. I was wearing a dress that day. And, you know, we go back and forth between wearing dresses and jeans and slacks, whatever. And he came up to me and said, you should wear dresses more often. And he proceeded to, like, bend down and say, I love looking at your legs.
No!
Yeah.
Ugh.
And if it was shocking. And I thought, I was embarrassed for myself, which is the wrong... You know, I thought, oh, my God, I'm not going to say anything. I'm going to lose my job.
This is the same guy who I walked into his office, and there was an intern at 20, 21, maybe 19, who was up on a table changing a light bulb, and he's looking at her and looks at me like, hey, this is a good party. Let's look at her.
Yeah.
I told the girl, never, ever be alone with this guy again.
Right.
And then closed the door, ripped him a new one. But the guy was 5 years older than I was. He wasn't going to change his behavior. But I guess what I'm saying is I'm surprised at institutionally the lack of confidence where there is an HR department in going to HR. Now, I realize the HR directors work for the company.
Yes.
Sure.
Is
that the reason?
I've dealt with an HR department before that they've said, well, this doesn't seem like a situation that we should get in the middle of. There was an interview on this station last week where there was somebody on the Business News Hour that said HR individuals are not honest brokers, and that's not to diminish what they do as a job, but they do ultimately work for the companies to protect them financially and make sure that if someone's going to have a lawsuit, they try to negotiate that and figure that out. And it's hard. And I think that when you talk about someone saying they want to look at your legs, they could, you know, they want you to dress a certain way.
Right.
And in my case, someone, and I've had a
condition of employment.
Right. Well, and I've been in so many situations. I mean, like, it becomes background noise when people talk about your body and.
Sure.
And you, like, we've developed this sort of defense mechanism that I think my friends all think that since I laugh it off, well, I must not be in danger, but it becomes part of your psychological reality.
Right.
And that's why the one where someone told me they wanted to punch me in the face was so, you know, if they said that to a guy, right, that's like game on, isn't it?
It's
for
ridiculous.
Dudes?
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah. And
Without a doubt.
But I that's what I want women to know too. And men, is, you know, if someone challenges you like that, I mean, you have to, you know, not necessarily get confrontational, but find your way to make sure that you are heard and to actually accept that that is something that is, it is harassment. You know, it may not be sexual, but it is power-based.
And the younger generation, the millennials, they're realizing this isn't, as you said earlier, Steve, this is not right, this is not normal, and I'm going to say something.
This is
there
not
a generational divide, though,
yeah.
or
yes.
is this woken up everybody?
I hope it's woken up everybody. I think that we, our age and older, like we're like, good, you know, and we have a lot of rage, too, and also, but a lot of, like, thank God. It's unfortunate it had to be beautiful white women, you know, I mean, like, really what that comes down to, and I think Jane Fonda has a point on this, that this is why we're starting to pay attention, you know. It's unfortunate, but yet also remarkable time when women feel like, I'm going to be heard, I'm going to say something,
well,
and I hope it stays.
I still go back to what I said before. Men have to accept the responsibility that the problem starts with us. And the problem is, you know when you're over the line. You do. You know when you're over the line. So don't act bewildered.
Hands. Everyone shake hands, by the way. I think it's a good time to now say professionally, if women want to hug, if they feel like they're huggers, but I think this is actually one small thing that guys can do is start just shaking hands. There was somebody that I used to engage with professionally that always wanted a kiss. He wanted a hug and a kiss, and I would always try to, like, hide. If I would see him coming into a party or to a business situation, I would duck around behind some people because I didn't, you know, the kiss would, like.
Well, can I tell your tell?
So I've known this.
Known this for years.
Yes,
that Patty would have an unwelcome hug, and I would think Sandberg would identify with this, an unwelcome hug, and you would go, oh, so we're hugging now, which you know should be an announcement to get your hands off me, creep.
Yeah.
But that's when I always knew that there was a problem.
Shake hands. Women are professionals as well. Yeah. If you shake a guy's hand, shake a woman, you know, I think that. Right. And women, you know, I think just start putting your hand out to shake. I think that sort of thwarts it, too.
Listen, it's been educational for me. I don't feel like I've ever sexually harassed anyone, and I've never held it as a condition of employment, but it's been educational for me as well.
It's a lot. It's been impressive what's gone on.
Let's talk about Trump when we come back.
Yes, please.
Yeah.
And your show in just a minute. 9:52 on 720 WGN.
It's 9:56 in the morning. Bill and Wendy coming up. We're talking with Patty Vasquez about, I think you wanted to talk a little Trump. Is there time? Is there? she asks wishfully.
Pardon me as I clear my throat for the 47th time.
If the Washington Post and the New York Times have been talking about this for months, are they now still fake news since everything they pretty much have said about Manafort has come to fruition?
Listen,
as
I
far
wait
as
for
indictment?
Guidance from the president on all things. You know that about me. And this George Papadopoulos guy, did you catch this piece of the story?
Third person charged with lying to the FBI in a statement that he made on October 5th. Was part of the Trump campaign as well.
So we got lying, Chicago money lawyer. Laundering, conspiracy. It's a lot of stuff.
So you'll cover
this. So many nothing burgers. What do you put on a nothing burger? Is it a jack cheese?
It goes great with an indictment. So in the last 20 seconds, I want to plug the show. 11 and 2.
Yes.
Every night. It's a crazy hour. If you crazy kids are up running around at that hour between 11 and 2, or do what I do, hear it on podcast.
Please do. Everything is available on WGNradio.com. We have Hannah Stanley with last-minute ideas. If you still are up tonight and you want to figure out Halloween decorations or costumes, she'll be joining us. And then, of course, our political roundtable to talk about.
I'm going as Werewolf Blitzer.
And watch our Effie Tapple video that we put on the web, too.
We made Effie Tapples.
Yeah. That's on a video or on the web right now.
It was very fun.
Which internet? The main one?
The main one.
We got told we were a little slow at mass producing that.
Well, I don't know if we were Lucy and Ethel or Laverne and Shirley. I kind of like, I think.
Schlemiel.
We needed a beer after that.
Great to see you as always.
Thank you so much.
Where are you on social media?
I'm at Patty Vasquez, CHI, and Patty V Show on Facebook. Thank you.